Katie Robinson and the Golden Toad by Joseph Darlington. Part the First, Prologue of Our Tale and Its Telling. Oh, hearken here! I have prepared for you the tale of Robinson, lowly born but risen to defeat the Golden Toad. He of dark visions and cross-blown hair, who sewed about the western lands a tapestry of sighs. Of him I write, and Katie Robinson, whose dreamy visions did return the face of God to earth, and whom I followed from the first days, knowing little but dazzled aware, like a befogged walker in a field of heavy snow, when thick strewn clouds a time do part in the sun, like many crystals, scatters brightness about him. I beg patience, that my hand can't carve such syllables adequate for this tale. I can but try, and in trying tell, of Katie Robinson and the Golden Toad. Part the Second, of the Golden Toad, his great triumph, and its cost. The Golden Toad hunkers down on the throne of the western land, seeing spiders. His vision criss-crossed with their legs in the wet dark, an orderly comes with a fly and leaves with another signed stack. The age of kings is over, and the orders of the toad fly far, drop, scatter, as the airborne strings tie and cross, sowing silent, muddled gaps, and darkness spreads like ink across the western lands. But hark and hear! The inky past holds words in the depths of how the Golden Toad was once a man. A fair young knight without grace but good cunning, whose father across his wedding bed cast a small loan. A rope of a million threads with which to tie and move the world. You see, the world is striped across with an infinity of strings. They tie trucks and trains, tie children's hands and minds beneath the earth. All essence pulled left and right and forth and back as the strings all tie, twist and struggle, and on them stick bejeweled flies. The young knight pitched his strings out in arcs and glistening casts with flies in mind. He hunted weeks and months, but the strings slipped from fidgeting fingers and the loan was lost. In misery and shame, the knight hid his face beneath the earth, but it was there he found his first glimpse of silvery black legs. It was a spider, many-stringed, atop a pile of flies, all pulling and pulling on the tangled cords, Congo to Dubai, Shanghai to the City of London, and the young knight knew that the many legs that wriggle in the dark had tied in strings the short destinies of the kingdom. On that day he swore to slay each spider, but his sword still sheathed. Great magics he knew he would need to heave the strings back from those legs. So into the darkness he crept, plucking here and there a tune, lifting strings in bundles lightly and surviving on flies, until through black subterranean decades hunger turned him gross, the strings' wet manipulations made moist his skin, thick his lips and webbed his plucking fingers. But he had gathered strings now, and he could play. So when the people saw his darkness, and the spiders that had pulled their strings, which he revealed, they welcomed back the Golden Toad, to slay for them and rule. But hunched upon the throne of the western lands, the Golden Toad still hungered for flies, and twisted his threads between his children, and all of his visions were of spiders, legs in the wet dark. The age of kings was over, but the Golden Toad who shook off kings was blind. Part the Third, of our hero, Katie Robinson, and the origins of her ministry. In an outland province of the Northern Wastes, a girl was born of the Robinsons, of Katie called, and strange she was. As a child, she paced her room, mimicking, whistling, jumping and falling, sobbing next second, shocking doctors, but sure of herself and the scenes she dreamed betwixt light and prism. Talk came late, but when it did, it brought friends and fellows. They packed her room and travelled taverns, crossing the north like tightrope walkers, playing out the dreams in carved air that God pierced into her skull, and love danced out again through her friends. Their shows travelled on whispers, echoed and made strange music when you heard it back down the years. I was but a fisherman, when I saw them first, and fate dragged me into that tavern. With mine own eyes I saw the skeletal dance of Robinson, her face unlike an actress, her eyes truly seeing, her body on a sound wave held, and the rest blank reality. Together the troop danced away the beery sodden pub and tore us all, I swear, away to cloudy kingdoms all aloft, where only Katie's visions were, and in the middle was Katie, seeing God. She saw God for us. She saw God for all of us who can't. And that day I gave the rest not to Katie Robinson, but to the things she sees betwixt light and prism, where futures are hiding, afraid of the dark. And in those trembling futures I can hear the sound of strings, discordant now, harmonious made, when all pull together and we knit a cloudy kingdom. Katie Robinson carries our glowing visions like a bag of buzzing fireflies in the half-grown dark of dusk. Part the fourth of the Dark Days, the Toad's Rule and the Counsellor Avon Murray. Across shingle and shire, dark poured in over the western lands entire, here with bellows and there with subtle sneers, but push or pull, the dark still bent and broke bonds, and our laughing was by silent grudges made into sighs, and the rest American carnage. The golden toad spied a mad sight, made strange his legislations, yet too the toad's very skin on the throne did make drunk the kingdom without kings, and the western lands grew wet with loud spittle. Travellers lost footing on paths once cobbled, now slick with slung mud, and with traded new-sucked oil black with reek. The world's hidden strings were some places snipped and so wrenched tight, strangling in a panicked mess. Jobs like rain fell but dried as quick as falling, and all that hands cobbled were quick books. So in Avon Murray came the elders of the small towns, huddled in a terrain valley to mix the soup of plans. Carlisle was present, and Boston, Hiroshima and New Jersey, grey-haired Danes and Latvian ants gathered with the spice doctors of Zanzibar. "Lo, the toad must tumble," one cried. "No," another. "Let the spiders be the true dark we rid, for the toad is webbed secretly by them. Golden webs, lest ye forget, do hold aloft our world. A cry, you fool," another, "we deny it." The council's voices whirled like tearing tides with deep and conical caves beneath, twisting all sense in their swirled supposings. Months they lasted, locked in deep, discursive chambers, till one wanton whisper broke their silent band and travelled here to Robinson's troop. We heard and told, and yet poor Katie but laughed. From lighting pubs like boozed candles, we wished to bear our flame afar and burn these querulous paper writers, lost in their ink and mazes with Katie's lit visions. She thought we mad and came only for the sake of us friends alone, letting no worldly politic near her ears, which only for harmonies were listening. Passing mansion-wrecked townships and follies, we came to Avon Murray, there meeting roaring chambers and ink-fed confusion. The elders denied full 12 times our very entrance until we cast about a vote and bore ourselves within on 77 lifted fists. And hark! No such vague mumble as mine could conjure spelling sufficient to make known that Katie Robinson did convince them then, and by dance we did compile our entranced decrees. In darkened days we called them thus, the Song of Future's Daughters. And peace they called for, and respite, and long-suffering aches to calm, of freedom spoke and peace again, just love and sanctity, with safe silence for some and miniature American flags for others, conjoined in distinction. Then see, not stopping here, they call on for happiness, full bellies and the rites of dance, artful time and green greens in speckled dawns, and foremost of all they cried for was the few naked words that Robinson spake in rounded vowel. We each have rights to cloudy kingdoms, the right to dream and act on dreams. So she said, and all agreed. And so our words were made stone carved and rolled across the western lands. Our troop trod on, not spying at first, our stages so draped in gathering banners that each must sing their lines through heaps of fabric and fine needlework. The people arose so soon and so many that we, like they, found truncheons drumming out our every entrance, and dogs and clouds that bring tears like stinging rain came falling down, and we then had no choice. From dulcet beds the hordes did roll and keep on rolling like a holy wheel, downhill to the final castle of the throne, and there the golden toad they sought. Part the fifth of the final conflict of Katie Robinson and the Golden Toad. And so to the court they crept, word-bearing, led by Robinson and with banners and placards, hooting, mixing dusts from every path across the western lands. On the Feast of St. Job's, they burst the mallow-scented city like glistening rivers of jam, ran down back alley and pawn, fast showroom and deal-speckled main street to the Palace of Dead Kings. Within, the Golden Toad decreed his decrees and pulled webs entangled in the spider dark, lost to all light but the throne. The Golden Toad never saw the falling of his gates, nor heard the guard cry lost and flee. There was but his yellow horns haloed by the circling retinue. Bannon ink breath of unshaven whispers. Kellyanne Conway, armoured in ivory and armed in silver. A skinly beast they call the Mad Dog. And all unspooled sons behind, still laughing and pulling at their father's flimsy strings. Into the scene the crowd burst and fell the first. Lo, they enter, and final battle havoc washes the sanctum red, and the safest sacred space of the western land drips blood. But as the Mad Dog tore and Conway sliced, as banners ripped and the crowds lunged, above all the Golden Toad saw dark and only dark sameness, like a loss of life and limb were but a wriggle of legs in a leg-dark sea. And eyes move not neath yellow horns, until... And hark, I tell thee true, as I didst raise the bugle then, and part my trisome noise to cry her entrance. I saw her with these two present eyes pace o'er the mangled mess, and face with distinct gaze the Mad Toad, holding aloft the song of future's daughters, and though I've seen not God, I saw Katie walk then. And brightness in those black orbs shone, pitch lifting like morning on the month-long midnight of the Arctic. The Golden Toad saw Katie Robinson, who stepped and showed her grace to him as if he were the man who first cast strings in air, a man young and deep-breathing who came to save all till battle fell and scattered his light in a million mirrors, dipping him always in dark. She cast the paper, light and crisp, into his webbed clutch, and silence fell. He cast his eye across the inked lines, and then a tear, fat and milky, formed and fell. Numb perplexion frittered the forces of light and dark alike, but of the master's heartache Katie knew, for where their writing was for you or I, the Golden Toad saw only strings pulled by frenzied spider scratch, and Katie squeezed his boil-wet shoulder and consoled the throned toad, who could not read. For lonely are the unlettered, and single is the voice within their minds, where you that read are made of many. You travel far, see much, and feel, where the many unreading live only now, work only, and breathe only air. We each have rights to cloudy kingdoms. Let us learn and in learning love. So spoke Robinson to the toad, and he quaked and, in seeing, at last agreed. Then pitchforks fell from hands forgiven, and the court's dark champions scattered to night. And lo, the battle was undone, for act and acting are but space, to them we must add time to think of what comes after. So the Golden Toad forsook the throne for the scholar's staff, and shuffled off where Katie danced, and danced she will again. Now the western lands have no more kings, and only dreams that reign. And though my song is over now, I repeat that last refrain. The western lands have no more kings, and only dreams that reign. So whatever comes next, may you write it, not I, for I am but a fisherman, trying, above all, to speak true, as Katie did to me.